T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Okay, this episode of Enough About Me is brought to you by RX Bar. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar with no BS. Get 25% off your first order at rxbar.com/Kirk and use the promo code Kirk. That's K-I-R-K. That's rxbar.com, Kirk. Promo code Kirk, K-I-R-K. And we know Enough About Me is always brought to you by our great friends at Milton's. At Milton's, you'll be as comfortable in our stores as you'll be in our clothes. I'm going to be there soon getting all my spring stuff. You cannot go wrong at Milton's. We know that. Whether you want to get a suit, comfortable stuff, stuff for work, you're not going to go wrong. I'm telling you right now, if you're a guy and you listen to the show and you want to look good, go to Milton's. You're done. That easy. South Shore Plaza, Braintree, and Chestnut Hill Square, Chestnut Hill. Enough About Me episode. Here we go. Jake Brennan. First of all, I'm jealous because this is a great fucking podcast idea he has. I love great podcast ideas. He has one. It's Disgraceland. It's going over controversies, murders, lawsuits, all the dirty laundry in the history of music. Started with Jerry Lee Lewis. Great episode. Sid Vicious was the second one. Sam Cooke, he's 3 in right now. He's a local guy. Jake Brennan, who has a great podcast, which is just dirty, gossipy music shit through music history. Does an awesome job, does it all himself. It's really good. I cannot recommend enough. Again, the podcast is Disgraceland. I talked to Jake about all the stuff, and I love this. You know, I like good documentaries. I like true crime. And I love music history. For me, it's a perfect marriage. So, you know, if 2 people subscribe to this podcast because of this podcast, I'll be happy for him. It's doing great. Doesn't need me anyway. I just want to come in and talk to him about this. He's doing a great job. I cannot recommend the podcast enough. Disgraceland, created, hosted by Jake Brennan, who joins me now. Enough About Me. So I listen to a lot of podcasts, and once in a while, one of these ones I've always wanted, like, is a listener, is exactly what Jake's doing with this Disgraceland, which is doing fantastic. 3 episodes in, is sort of these mysteries. He's sort of, because there's so many of them in rock music. So I'd be curious, like, so just walk me through how this happened.
Well, I had my first kid, and I was reading Legs McNeil's Please Kill Me. Do you know that book?
The Oral History of
Punk Rock.
Yep.
And I just, you know, like I said, I just became a dad, and I'm reading this thing about all my favorite rock stars, Lou Reed, Iggy Pop.
Right. And so that's your era. Those are your guys.
I'm sort of all guys, but I like the classic guys as much as I like Bag Brains or Cro-Mags or obscure shit. But so anyways, I'm reading this book, and it's about some of my heroes, music heroes. And I'm like, these guys suck. They're bad fucking people. Your perspective is changed once you have a kid.
Yeah.
And that sort of like started me thinking. And I knew a lot of these stories. I read the Jerry Lee Lewis story when I was real young. It was in a Rolling Stone anthology, and it just kind of blew my mind. And I would think about it every couple years and be like, how does nobody know this? You know,
well, it's such a hagiography attached to them too, where it's like, you know, even the guys I love, like Springsteen, they play with these guys and you never think of them as like, but these are repulsive fucking human beings.
Totally. You know, John Lennon kissed Jerry Lee Lewis's feet when he was inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
And John Lennon, he's next on my list. I'm actually starting writing that one now.
His death was a big mystery. I'll break it to you. David Chapman did it.
Well, there's interesting stuff in the death. Chapman did it, but Chapman did it because he was obsessed with Catcher in the Rye.
Right, and Salinger, yeah.
And he believed that John Lennon was full of shit. He was a phony. And when you really get into it, I love John Lennon, but when you really get into it, he was kind of full of shit.
Right.
You know? So it's like, it's that is a really interesting sort of terrain to mine, you know, to look into, other than, you know, he was martyred and all that other crap, which is true. But I love music and I love history and I love true crime. And it's, to me, the interesting stuff is like the details.
You see, I'm jealous. I hate when people, I'm glad it's here, but I hate when people have fucking great ideas that I wish I had thought of. It's such a great idea, but there's got to be a tremendous amount of legwork. The pilot, the first episode was Jerry Lee Lewis. I don't know if I messaged you right away or followed you or whatever, tweeted out. We were down in Florida for work. I listened to it on a run one day. I didn't, you know, these things just sort of pop up on your phone one day.
Sure.
Like, this exists. And I was like, this is fucking fantastic. The reason why is because it was warts and all.
Yeah.
Like, because you're used to people saying, oh, he married his cousin, whatever. But I admit, like, I'm like you, I pay attention to stuff. I read books. I didn't realize the Jerry Lee Lewis stuff to that extent, that he had wives die under mysterious circumstances back to back.
Yeah, I think
how far apart?
Not at all. I mean, like within a year and a half.
It's so fucked up in the autopsy and the way the local police. So anyway, like we don't need to. But I like the idea that you're finding these people in rock history as long as you leave Bruce alone.
Bruce, I think, is the outlier. He's the one who, with there's nothing there.
Right.
I mean, he left his wife.
He fucked around his wife.
Yeah, and like, you know, fucked off his band and all that. But other than that, there's nothing really there.
Right. So how does it, so you picked, let's say you picked Jerry Lewis first, right?
Yeah.
So what do you do? So you how does the process go from picking that to getting the podcast on the air?
Usually there's a primary source. There's one document. I try to do, like there's a ton of these stories and there's a ton of innuendo and like you hear shit in bars.
Right.
But I try to treat everything as I don't use sources that aren't credible, isn't credible journalism.
Mm-hmm.
So I find one primary source. I dig into that. And then I just keep going and I try to find my way into it. Like what's the Jerry Lee Lewis one is interesting, right?
Yes.
That's just like he got away with murder. The John Lennon thing. If I'm going to do that, I'm not just going to do a thing about like he was killed by Mark David Chapman. I have to find something in there that's interesting. So, you know, I write the story and then the next part is I score it. I sit down and I do the music for it.
Right.
Because
you'd have to pay for rights to play a whole lot of shaking going on.
Yeah.
Or not.
I could get away with, there's like fair use, right? But it's kind of nebulous and anyone can sue anyone in America. And so in a lot of these cases, I'm talking about people in a not so favorable light.
Right.
So I'm like, why chance it?
And Jerry Lee Lewis is alive.
He's alive.
Like, he's alive right now as we're talking, which is weird anyway.
It's nuts. He just played in Florida a couple weeks ago.
So you score it, which is, and then you narrate it.
Score it. Well, I narrate it and then I score it.
Okay. Yep. You have this sort of dramatic narration, a little, you know.
That was tricky, man. That was like figuring out how to read it, like how to speak in a way, because you can't speak like this because no one can follow you because it's super fast. If it's not conversational, it's just one guy on a mic, you can't follow this. And I've heard podcasts like that. And that was the first thing I did. I was like, this ain't going to work.
Right.
And then the second thing I did was I just sounded like a cross between some douchebag from Zoolander or Henry Hill from Goodfellas. And I was like too affected.
Right.
It's like, this ain't going to work. So that honestly took the longest thing. It was like, how do I speak in a way that's conversational? It doesn't sound contrived. And really it's just about like slowing it down.
Yes.
And trying not to be over dramatic, but still being dramatic.
The podcast reminds me of a lot. I don't know if you've ever even listened to it. Is the, you must remember this, the Karina Longworth podcast.
Yep.
She sort of has a, now, I've listened to a podcast interview with her where she said she was sort of almost vamping it like in the old, like an old fashioned way, almost like a Vincent Price or like an Elvira kind of thing. But there's sort of that, which is good, and it's interesting. And is the move going to be to keep them all to sort of that half hour in and out?
Yep.
You know, will it be multiple part ones or no?
Maybe I'm talking with a bigger podcast, much bigger, about doing a collaborating and doing a sort of season one on one story.
Okay.
So doing like 12 episodes, like picking like Jerry Lee Lewis or something and really diving in. So that might happen.
Yeah.
But I think Disgraceland, I want to keep it tight. I want to keep it 30 minutes. It's so much competition to get into people's ears.
Yeah. But once you have a niche, like, so I wouldn't presume to know, but I see the charts you've done really well. I'm guessing that it's doing really well.
It's blown my expectations
away.
I mean,
so you're doing this. So what is your background? How do you
come from music? I grew up in the music industry. My dad's a musician. My wife's dad is a musician. I sort of grew up in that. I went to Northeastern. I had a record deal while I was at school. So it was like, do I do the co-op and work lights at fucking Bill's Bar, or do I go on tour with Sick of It All and play to, you know, 500 to 1,000 people every night? Obviously did that. Put out records, made a living. You know, it seemed like a living at the time as an indie musician.
Right.
And then when I sort of, you know, got to be an adult and started thinking about having a family, that's when the music industry kind of caved. And I had been on various record labels at the time, put out multiple records, had publishing deals. And at that time, I signed a publishing deal and sort of everything I recorded ended up on like shitty reality TV. Like,
oh, really?
You heard my music in like Keeping Up with the Kardashians or Catfish.
Is that a living?
It's a meager living.
Okay.
It was enough at the time, you know?
So what do you get paid if your song's on Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
It's drastically gone down over the last 10 years because it became one of the only sources of income for musicians.
Oh, so as record sales
went
down,
so then everyone starts doing it.
Right.
But I had a song in Entourage, and our band got paid, I think it was like $8,000 or something.
Okay,
like
so not a living once you're actually an adult and you have a wife and a kid.
Exactly. I mean, some guys do it, but to really do it and make like, you know, $200,000 a year, you got to sit in a studio like this with headphones on 24/7.
Just do it all day.
Pump it out. Yeah. Right.
And it's not what you had, probably not what you had in mind when you were a kid trying to be a
musician. Not at all. Right. Not at all. And from there, I ended up, I was hired at an ad agency to be a creative director and just focus on music.
Okay.
And then I was like, I can't, fuck this.
Oh, you didn't like it?
I can't work in advertising.
You feel like a sellout.
It wasn't necessarily a sellout. I mean, there's really great creative people, but it's just like, for the type of creative person that I am, where I just want to make something and do it and put it out there.
The whole process of it is.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, you guys work on, people work on stuff in ad agencies for years, and it never sees the light of day.
Right, right.
So I left there in January 2017, and I was like, I'm going to do this podcast just because I'm not going to be in a band again. I got to do something.
Was this kicking around your head for a while or no?
Yeah. I had asked my wife and my sort of creative partner, I was like, if you could hire me to do anything, like one job, what would it be?
Right.
And they both remarkably had the same answer. They were like, my wife was like, I'll just hire you to tell stories.
Yeah.
You're a great storyteller, which I've never thought of before.
Right.
I thought of myself as being mildly full of shit, but never like.
Those are the same thing. Right.
And Adam, who I'd done a lot of music stuff with, said, I'd pay you to just sit in a vocal booth and just talk. He's like, you talked me into the craziest shit.
Right.
So I was like, all right. And I had the kind of the idea of podcasting, but I didn't know what it was going to be.
Yeah.
And that was kind of it. I mean, I sort of zeroed in on this like music and true crime thing, like rock and roll true crime.
It feels endless to me. Maybe I'm wrong.
Obviously,
there's some ceiling at some point, but I mean, it feels like
it keeps giving.
Scratch the surface of it. I mean, you know, you can go back as, I mean, you can go back 80, 90 years if you want.
Totally.
Right?
Lead Belly, you know.
Right.
I can go all the way back. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stuff. You know, there's I'm not going to touch. There's so much, unfortunately, like kid stuff out there. Like, you know, like pedophilia with musicians.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's fucking endless. And
well, I would say Jerry Lee Lewis would qualify.
Oh,
I mean, if you marry your, she was 13, right?
Yeah, 13.
I mean, that's he marries a 13-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, Steven Tyler adopted his 14-year-old girlfriend.
Right,
like come on.
Right, yeah, you don't have to focus just on murder.
right. So there's, you know, I have a couple episodes, two episodes from now. I'm doing the Beck story with the Church of Scientology and how two of his friends were pressured. The story goes from the Church of Scientology into killing themselves because they wanted their influence out of Beck's life.
Right.
So, you know, and that one's, you know, it's not as juicy as murder. I find the ones that are more violent and insane are the ones that are more fun to write and tell. So the next one on Norwegian black metal, I mean, that's just crazy.
It's wild.
It's
you. What's the 30s? What's the synopsis of it?
A niche scene from Norway. They wanted to be the most extreme rebellious form of music ever. So they were Satan worshipers, but that wasn't enough. So they had to burn down 30 churches in Norway. I mean, they brought the country to their knees, murdering each other, cannibalism. It's just like, you just, whoa, wow, okay, these guys went for it.
Do you find yourself wanting almost to get away from, like, the, I think you mentioned Lemon, like the obvious ones, like Elvis, the way he was manipulated, stuff like that? Or do you find yourself drawn to guys like that? I mean, Elvis is a wild story. The guy who wrote the
Sam Cooke.
The guy who wrote the Sam Cooke book is the guy who wrote the two Elvis books?
Yeah. His kid used to be my manager.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Jake Gorelnik. So that's Peter Gorelnik.
So he wrote those two great Elvis books.
Yep.
I mean, is that, or you just say, you know what, I want to dig, because what's funny about it is, like, I know who Sam Cooke is, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people my age kind of know who he is, but I'm going to guess people 20 years younger don't. So when I say Sam Cooke's an obvious story, it's probably not.
Yeah. Yeah,
right?
You're right.
Whereas Lennon is or Elvis is. But do you find yourself saying, I want to find the ones that are really sort of, you know, sort of hidden away, or
not to give a shitty answer, but it's both. I want to find I want to find the ones I love, the classic rock ones. I want to find the niche in that story.
Right.
I want to find the untold thing that doesn't get told. You know.
Yeah.
Like, that's why the John Lennon one is exciting to me. I did Tupac and Biggie, but my point of view on it is, like, everyone's like, who killed Tupac and Biggie? It's like, well, we know no one's saying it because they're afraid that he'll retaliate, but it's, you know, my take on it was the media killed Tupac and Biggie. I mean, the media upped that story to the point where the animosity was so thick that it, you know, it was driven to that end result.
It feels like, and I don't know if it's because of social media or whatever it is, and maybe it's just because I'm older now and I'm more cynical. It feels like rock stars aren't what rock stars used to be. And that's probably a good, but I think your instinct is to say, like, you know, that's a bad thing, but I'm not sure that's a, like, when you look at the way these guys were, the way they were treated and treated others, that may not be a bad thing, right?
Well, that brings,
like, when I grew up, like, you know, I don't know, the biggest rock stars in the world are the guys we know, you know, whether it was guys in The Who or Jagger or Bruce mm-hmm. or, like, who's the biggest rock star in the world today?
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, Jay-Z?
I guess, but know? I mean, like, it doesn't, I feel like, but Jay-Z has a very public life. He's on, like, Jerry Lewis not on Instagram. You
right.
know, Bruce Springsteen was not doing Snap Stories, you know, Roger right. Daltrey, Pete Townsend. These guys, we, you know, Jagger, Richards, we didn't know shit about them.
We didn't
really.
Know what they were doing.
You get every 6 months, you get an ass-kissing Rolling Stone thing from whoever about right. them, and then they went away. Mm-hmm. And then you found stuff out later. But now I feel like these guys are so public that I don't know, 30 years from now, if there'll be a Jay-Z Disgraceland episode.
And when they do act insane, their backlash is right. so harsh.
It also feels choreographed sometimes, too. Where it's like, it's my time that crazy.
Right.
Like, I have to pretend I'm a rock star.
Right.
It's just a weird, you know.
I'm like, just go crazy, man. Do it. Like, right. be that. Like, right. we need that.
But what I think is interesting is, like, it's like you're saying, like, you know, in the way we celebrated, like, the Jerry Lee Lewis's, but now when we look back at it, we're like, well, these guys were, I mean, Jerry Lee Lewis is fucked up. I mean, he's fucking crazy. He probably could have done 10 hours on it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And so my thing is, like, why is he crazy?
Right, what happened?
And then it's like, oh, well, look at the way he was raised, like a fucking animal. You know, I mean, the James Brown one in particular. I mean, raised, like, hung upside and down in a burlap bag at age 11 and beat with a stick right. by hookers.
Right.
Like, that's how the guy was raised. It's right. no wonder he right. was nuts, you know? So that's what's interesting to me. And I think these guys now, they weren't raised that way. They go to school and major in music industry before they get record deals.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's just right. not as interesting to me.
Does it make the music not as good?
I think
doesn't have to. I mean, there doesn't have to be yeah. some weird, you know, you have to tap into some anger and insanity yes. that these guys, like Justin Timberlake, just doesn't have. I mean, he's a talented guy.
He's an entertainer.
But he's been famous since he was like 11 years old.
Right. right?
But I guess
right.
Michael Jackson was too.
Yep. But again, raised under
yeah.
awful
Joe Jackson
circumstances.
Was, that's true. Right. That's yep. true. Yeah. Is it going to be a Whitney Houston one?
I'd like to do that, yeah. yeah. I don't know. Like, with that one, I don't know what my original
what
point of view is
right.
there.
What's
you know?
Is it going to be... I have a whole bunch of them for you.
What do you got?
We talked about Dennis Wilson.
That's amazing. I just listened to the You Must Remember This
Excellent.
On Manson. Yeah. And what really struck me on that is how he died. I never really realized
it. Right.
He kept diving off
yes.
to find that charm or whatever. Right. Like, that was right. really poetic to me in this weird way. So I don't know what it is there. But yeah, I want to do Dennis.
And he was that. So they play that song at the end of the Farewell, My Friend. Is that what it's called? Farewell, My Friend.
I don't know the name of it, but I remember hearing it.
So I had no knowledge that he was even a singer. I knew, yeah. but that album is, I think it's California Blue, is what it's called.
Yeah,
it's fucking unbelievable.
It's amazing. It's heartbreaking.
How about Del Shannon?
Well, that's the petty one I want to do.
Because he produced Del Shannon's record.
Petty and has this thing where he's like, he's a fucking saint. And he is, and everyone loved Petty.
Howie
right?
Epstein?
Yes. Like, Del Shannon's like, don't take Howie,
right.
man.
Right.
And he takes Howie, right. and Del Shannon kills himself.
Right. Right.
And then someone burns down Tom Petty's house. Like, that's a story, you know?
So Howie Epstein was basically produced Del Shannon's stuff and was like the lead guy in his band, right? Every mm-hmm. band has sort of a guy
leader.
Like that, I guess, right. So that yep. was him. And... what's his name? Ron Blair left the Heartbreakers?
Yes.
And they needed somebody to replace him. And to your point, they produced the Del Shannon record. Petty did his comeback mm-hmm. record. And he loved him. And Del Shannon was like, it's in that documentary, the Bogdanovich one.
Yeah.
And Petty's like, and Del Shannon's like, don't take him. And Petty, who admired Del Shannon and loved him, was like, basically, fuck you in a
yeah.
nice way.
Yeah.
I'm taking him.
Yeah.
And by the way, Epstein died of drugs, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years later.
Heroin overdose?
Yeah. He was like, fucking really had big fucking issues.
Yeah.
How about, what's his face? The guy who sang I Fought the Law.
Eddie Cochran?
No,
or
Bobby
Fuller. Yeah.
He died under mysterious circumstances.
That's brutal. I think I can just tell that. I can just read the Wikipedia. And that's
you're all set?
Like, yeah.
You're all set. It's
like, he was like filleted in his car.
How many episodes in the can do you have right now?
I have 12 done. I start the second season of 12 next week. Once I come out of Babyland, I start.
You do every 2 weeks you release them?
Yeah, every 2 weeks. Pretty much. I'm squeezing some in at the end to get out before July 4th and, you know, same at the second.
What's with any backlash at all?
Yeah.
What do you got? What's been the biggest? What's a consistent rip, so fair?
The biggest one has been sort of in the Sid Vicious one. I got some flack for, which is totally wrong, but just like celebrating this guy who abused his wife, which
right.
like, did you listen to the episode?
Right.
Like, I'm not, right. I clearly say that's not what I'm doing. That was the biggest one and that stung, but it's just like, you know, backlash for my language. you know, like for swearing.
Oh, yeah, it's
like, come on, man. Like, what are we talking about here? This isn't NPR. But, you know, the criticism is what it is. I mean, you can't be affected by it. It's going to happen.
Do you that? But I guess I'm so interested because you see so many podcasts you like. I don't know if you were a big listener before you started doing podcasts.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
And you like them and then they just sort of float away. And yeah. I've been guilty of doing, I mean, I've been guilty. I've gone on hiatus at times too, so I'm no better than anybody else. But like, is this something you say, okay, I can make a living doing this or no?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
If you are consistent with it. Yeah. I mean, I had advertising out of the gate. I signed an advertising deal pretty much right away.
Right.
And that, I mean, you know, it's, you know, I'm not retiring, but I think podcasting is like a way to sort of develop different extensions of whatever the sort of creative IP is that you're developing. So eventually, you know, I want to do, I mean, this creative ground is super fertile and I want to see where I can take this beyond podcasting.
What was your, so you do it, where do you do it from?
I have a little studio that I built in North Reading. It's in an old massage parlor that was busted up for
really
handies.
Really?
So it's perfect for disgrace.
That's absolutely
It's
perfect.
Fucking gross, Kurt.
That's funny. Really?
Yeah, it's temporary.
I don't think I was ever there. I'm trying to recall. There may have been a time. A man gets lonely.
Yeah.
So it's there. And when you started, like, what was your best case scenario? When you, like, what was the goal? I mean,
The goal was.
Have you exceeded your goals already in terms of listening?
I have. Listeners. Thank God. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, so your goal was to just kind of carve a little niche and do
exactly.
Your thing
and maybe someone would hire me to teach them how to do a podcast type
okay.
of thing. Like maybe and I come from, like I said, I was in the advertising yeah. world. Now, podcasting is huge with brands.
Right.
So there was sort of the idea of, well, you know, maybe instead of doing music programs like I was doing for brands at the agency, maybe I could help them develop podcasts.
Right.
But now it's sort of the incoming calls have been kind of bananas, and there's a lot of other opportunities. That
TV stuff or no?
I don't want to jinx anything.
Well, I don't have to give me any specific, but it seems like a natural thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the, I guess in a way, between books and documentaries and podcasts, we are in the golden era of true crime.
Yeah.
Like there's, but I mean, it always existed, but now there's just so many places
mm-hmm.
for it to surface. I mean, it is. Between documentaries and podcasts, it is sort of, I think, the fabric that keeps it
and TV.
Alive.
And
TV, and even books, which they have this great niche as well. I'm not sure what it is. I don't know. But I mean, you know, like Dateline and 48 Hours have each been on for like 30 years. People like, and meanwhile, you're watching it and you're saying, you know, you're 4 minutes in, you're like, well, okay, obviously the husband killed the wife. Every
exactly
single fucking time the husband
right.
killed the wife.
Right.
But we'll watch. Oh, okay. And then we're done. But there's something we like about that.
But
yours is different, though, is there's stuff we legitimately, like, we don't know. So, you know, there's just, like, I didn't know certain things about Sam Cooke. And I read the book, and there's certain things I don't know about Sam Cooke.
Right.
So that's, you know, we managed to tap on that. So what's, so the next one is what?
Norwegian Black
Norwegian
Metal.
Next one. Okay. And after that is?
Beck. Van Morrison. Yeah.
What did he kill?
He didn't kill anyone, but his guitar player. So you know that book just came out, Astral Weeks?
Yeah. Is it good or no?
It's great. It's written by a Boston guy, a guy I kind of know. So I contacted him. I was like, look, give me the galleys.
Why am I not a big Van Morrison guy? What happened in my life?
As
a musician.
Listen to Astral Weeks. It was lost on me. It is a whole other thing, man.
Really?
It's like Wildflowers. It's like that. It's like a creative statement that gets overlooked in his whole sort of catalog.
He was a huge...
But he did it here in town.
No, I know. I actually, it's funny you said that. I was at the bookstore in Winchester and I flipped through it. I had no idea. It's set in Boston in the late 60s, right? I had no idea.
Yeah, so his guitar player, who was a New York guy, was kind of signed with Carole King and Jerry Goffin. They were kind of like working his band. It didn't really go anywhere. Comes to Emerson, starts working with Van Morrison, and gets murdered mysteriously.
Really?
Yeah, and viciously and violently. And that's sort of... this episode is like the most... I kind of, you ever read James Ellroy?
Yes, of course.
Love James Ellroy.
Yeah.
And I love how he kind of like takes true crime and kind of like dramatizes it in a way where you know he's taking the piss out of it,
right.
but it's still super compelling.
Right.
This episode for me was the most I could kind of get in that arena and play.
All right, more with Jake here in a second. But first, RX Bar, a whole food protein bar made with 100% whole ingredients and no BS, no added sugar, artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives, fillers. Every ingredient serves a purpose. For example, egg whites are a main source of the protein that is easy for your body to absorb, gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, great tasting.
11 delicious flavor varieties, sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit flavors. There's an RX bar for you. Real food ingredients taste really good. You can taste the real fruit, the spices like sea salt. Kate Minahan, the great Kate Minahan, Catherine Moore Minahan, the best girl in the whole world, is eating RX bars every day after school. That's her snack. She loves them, loves them, loves them. Can't get enough of them. She wants more. Snack at the office, breakfast on the go. Again, after work, after school for Kate, before or after swimming for her. Gives her a good boost. She loves it. So do I. 25% off your first order. RXBar.com/Kirk. Use the promo code Kirk. That's RXBar.com/Kirk. Promo code K-I-R-K.
Are you able to still, like, if you're in the car and Jerry Lee Lewis is on?
Oh, yeah, man.
You still like him?
Oh, my God.
The music, even though you think the guy's a creep.
Well, that's
the
whole...
You're able to separate those. You're not able to separate the two.
No, but it doesn't affect me. It's like Live at the Star Club is still the greatest live album ever.
Well, could you watch Kevin Spacey on TV today?
That I haven't been able to do.
That's what I mean, but I'm with you. It's weird. Music is different. We know
that
James Brown was a shaky guy. Chuck Berry was a very shaky guy. I mean, this guy is Jagger.
But there's a huge difference between Chuck Berry, who invented rock and roll, right? Like, quite possibly invented an entire cultural earth-shattering thing, versus Kevin Spacey, who's done some great movies.
Sure, but I'm saying, but Chuck Berry's, indiscretions are really fucking bad.
Yeah,
but you're right. The music is the hardest one to separate.
I think because we expect them to be that way. We give them a pass for some reason. It's baked into the cake in a way.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas with Kevin Spacey, it's like you want her. I don't know. I want my actors to be George Clooney, man. I want them to be like Frank Sinatra,
right,
like beyond cool, but also relatable, you know? And with musicians, I guess I'm just fine with them being fucking aliens.
There's got to be a Sinatra episode in there.
Oh, that's next season as well. It's the Kennedy, Giancana thing.
Oh, the election and all that stuff?
Yeah, and the death of Kennedy and the assassination.
So you're going to go, so there's no, you'll go anywhere in the music world. You don't give a shit. If the story's good, it doesn't matter.
Yep. I kind of go out of it in one episode this season. The Limelight Murder story in the 90s in New York?
No.
The whole club kid thing.
Oh,
Culkin did that movie.
Those
guys weren't musicians. The guy who got killed was a DJ.
Right.
But the story's just too fucking insane. So I did that. I'm pretty stoked on that one.
What's the big one that you haven't started tackling yet? Is there one that you say, okay, this is the one I'm holding off for? There's something that's
Phil Spector.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Well,
and I, that's a particularly big one. The smaller ones are kind of more intimidating for me for some reason. You know, like Graham Parsons.
Right.
It's like, how do I do it in a way? And there's not a lot of info out there as well. I mean, I know there's a movie about it, but I don't know what is true. You know.
Right.
The Bobby Fuller one is another one.
So, do you read the Van Morrison book and then say, holy shit, there's a story? Do you know about the story before and then go to the book?
Well, that was a little different because I knew the author. And he told me the story. But a lot of this stuff, I have people now like on social media just
Shit,
sending me stuff left and right. I have a Google Doc with like 150 potential stories in it, which is nuts.
It's got to be wild, right? But anytime somebody has a great fucking idea and they do a good job, and it's funny how this works. If you have a great idea and you work hard, you do a great job. Guess what? Most of the time, it fucking works.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I don't get the sense that you're going to get tired of it. I mean, who knows, 4 years from now, but, I think you're enjoying it, right?
I'm loving it, man. It's a lot of work.
It's more work than people. So how long is a script?
Scripts are, God, I don't know. I mean, like 5,000 words.
Yeah.
Is that right? Not too long.
Right.
And again, that's weird, too. I had to figure out, like, how do I get this down to, like, so it fits within a 30-minute thing?
Right.
What does that even mean? You know, like, how many, what's the word count, all that shit?
Why can't it be 48 minutes, one episode?
Creatively, I like to have a box. It helps me kind of like work within it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you know
the economics of it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they go over based on ads and stuff. Some are like 32, some are 35, some are 28, but roughly in that 30-minute.
What music did you listen to growing up?
Started out with classic rock, and then in late high school and college, I was like big into like the DIY punk and hardcore scene, which is a real self-sustaining thing. And like, there's like a touring network where it was great. Like, I was like, touring and making records when I was like 20 years old and like with my fucking heroes, which was incredible. And from there, we did a lot of traveling in the South, and I got into like country music. Like, you go to gas stations in, 1997 in Alabama, and all they have is Hank Williams and Merle Haggard tapes, and that sort of kicked that off. And then I did a record on Yep Rock Records, which was a solo record after my hardcore band, and it was all kind of like Americana country stuff.
Was there any point where you thought like I'm going to be able to do this full time as a musician for a career? Like, did you think
I did it.
My third? I'm saying, you're going to do it for 20, 25, 30 years. Did you ever think that break was going to come where I'm going to be this guy?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I walked into Island Def Jam and did the Springsteen thing, played for the A&R guy and walked out with a check. And that was and then it quickly went in the toilet. So there were lots of those moments.
Why didn't it work?
I wasn't what they wanted me to be at the time. Yeah.
Why aren't you doing it today? What do you think something was missing, or is it
I was
not good enough?
Yeah, not good enough in ways. By the time I had those opportunities, I was hitting I was in my early 30s. Right. And at that point, I was sick of touring in a shitty van, and I was sort of becoming a domestic cat, I didn't know I wanted a family, but it was there. So I didn't have that thing. I didn't have that fucking drive and go.
But your buddies who still do it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And they're staying at some fucking motel tonight.
Yeah. Well, some of them stay in, Ritz-Carlton.
Oh, sure. No, right. But I'm saying, but some of them are still out there trying.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be able to do that at this age.
I would not. It blows my mind, man. Anyone who can make any living in the music industry in 2018 on any level is shocking to me. I don't know how they
Why is it so difficult now?
There's just, I think it's a capital thing. There's just not as much money, literal money in the industry anymore. Like there is in tech or advertising or other forms of entertainment.
So the biggest, what was the biggest album of last year? When I say album, whatever the hell that is.
The Harry Styles one, maybe.
Okay. Why is that? How much different is that financially impact versus, say, Born in the USA or Thriller?
Oh, it's not even close.
The download buys don't matter. The Apple, just because you can get anything you want for free, right?
I know it's
basic, but that's it.
It's just become devalued.
Yeah.
The actual return on selling an album in 1984 was so much bigger.
I'm always interested in this part of it. So, what did, if you wrote, let's say you wrote Every Breath You Take, right?
Yeah.
Just say, I know Sting wrote it, but let's say whoever wrote it. The return for that is different than if you wrote Hello by Adele 30 years later. You don't get X amount for Apple for a download, or
you get the royalty rate is smaller to my understanding.
Right.
And nowadays, that Harry Styles record, you look at it, or Bruno Mars, the huge stuff, there's eight guys who get writing credit.
Oh,
so they're splitting up a smaller pie even more.
Well, what happened? What happened to, when I grew up, and again, your music taste is different than mine, but when I grew up, it was a guy and a guitar. He wrote the songs. Seeger, Bruce, Mellencamp, Dylan, Fogerty came back. He did. What happened?
Well, I think with everything, the bigger and stronger corporations get.
Right.
It was the same back then. It was still about making money, right?
Yeah,
Sony's the boards are controlling things and they're becoming more efficient. So I think there's this mindset that if we really want to maximize profit, we got to have 8 hot shit songwriters write this song, not Harry Styles.
Why does it maximize the profit?
Well, they just think they mitigate their risk by putting people into the mix to
actually
take care.
Oh, there's a better chance if you put that many people in it?
Yeah.
And are you going to get into I'm an addict to this stuff. I've watched all these. The thing that's so great about your thing, and it's so great about these documentaries too. I watched a documentary about Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, I have no use for it. Did you watch this?
I haven't. No.
All you need to make it work, and Behind the Music invented it, really.
Yeah.
Is a band that fucking hates each other at some point. They break up. Every band ever. And I'm going to watch it no matter what.
Yeah.
I watch Chicago. I don't really like Chicago. Not really, But Peter Cetera became too big and David Foster came in and there's drama and they kick him out and I'm fucking sold.
It's the story, man.
Yes,
it's about the story.
So, but that itself works. But the other thing that you always get in these documentaries, particularly back then, is a manager fucked over an artist.
Yeah.
Bruce with Mike Appel or the Eagles with Geffen. Or every single time Petty had his publishing.
Yeah.
Is that worthy of an episode or some guy who fucked over a bunch of people?
Yeah.
Are there guys like that in history? Is that still going on?
The one I kind of want to get into because there's a lot of dirt there is the guy, what's his name? The guy who did all the boy bands.
Oh, the guy who died, right?
Pearlman.
Was that the guy?
He's in jail.
Oh, was it pedophilia? Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
he fucked him out of money as well.
Right. Yeah.
But to your point, the first record contract I ever signed, the guy flies out from Chicago, biggest independent record label in the country.
What year is this?
1997.
And how much money do you have in the bank at this point?
$4.
Nothing, right? Nothing.
But I'm playing shows and I'm touring.
No, I get
care
it. Right. Things are going
care.
Well.
We're
right.
in a band. We're in it, But, you know, we wanted to put out a record. We wanted people to hear it. And back then, before the internet, you could get on one of these labels and you would pre-sell 50,000 copies before the thing even hit stores.
They'd really?
Just order it because okay. the label had such a rep.
And you're getting no money from that.
You were supposed to get money from that. But, and it's more money, too, if you're on an independent label. Because now you're splitting it 50-50 versus if you're on a major label, you're getting like
10%. Right.
Right? So we had an eye on that as well. Right. And we had a choice. We had major labels we were talking to. But there were two indies we were talking to who were huge. One of them flew out, talked to us. This is the deal you're going to get. It's a great deal. Blah, blah, blah. Basically, it was like two records, an EP, cash advance.
Right.
We own the merch. We own the publishing. By the time we got the contract, it was a 7-record deal, less money, and he owned all the publishing, all the merch, and the rights to everything I was ever going to do musically for the rest of my life.
Did you sign it?
No.
Okay, well, I don't know.
No.
But guys do, right?
Guys do. We had a great lawyer. The lawyer was like, and we had already been in the studio. He already gave us money. We'd already recorded the record.
Right.
There's ads and magazines that this thing's coming out. We're on tour.
Right.
I'm like, what the fuck are we going to do, man? This record has to come out. The lawyer, thank God, was like, don't do anything. It's like, you don't have to do shit.
Right.
He gave you the money.
Right.
The record's coming out. Just don't sign it. So we never signed it.
So, but in history, you get guys like, I guess, well, I'll just pick Bruce, who was a kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shows up and Appel has him sign this deal where he just fucking owned everything.
Right. Yeah.
And he signed it.
Yeah. I think there's just a naivete that like they don't know. You
right.
don't know when you're a kid, you know? And
so when you don't own publishing, essentially.
You're fucked.
Right.
I you mean,
so you, would, so you wouldn't own, you know.
You wouldn't own the rights.
Well, look born to run.
Ask the drummer from the Police.
Right.
Ask Stu Copeland
he got
what he
fucked
feels
over,
about
right?
publishing. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure because Sting has everything, right?
Yeah.
For Every Breath You Take,
yeah.
which has to be worth,
I think
I
it does
know.
Like $700,000.
A year?
No, more like a month. It's nuts.
So $8 million a year?
It's insane.
So like when I hear...
the Diddy one, too.
Oh, that's right.
They sued.
Remake,
he
right?
sued Diddy because Diddy
right.
didn't clear it.
That's right.
So it's huge.
I always wonder about that shit, too. Like how did MC Hammer think he was going to get away with that? How do you guys think they can get away with that?
I don't know, man. It's bananas.
I mean, you hear that, and you're like, was it Ray Parker Jr. too?
Yeah, I think that might have been an accident.
Was it?
I think it might have been in one of those things, because that happens as a songwriter. You write this thing, and you're like, this is the best fucking thing. And then you're like, oh, shit, that's a Beastie Boys song, and
right,
I didn't realize
right.
it, you know?
Well, that's what Lennon said. I mean, McCartney said about yesterday, is he walked around for days thinking, well, I must have stolen this from somebody.
Yeah.
I must have stolen this from somebody.
Yeah. 100%.
McCartney's another guy. Maybe you'd know better than me. It seems like, by and large, he has been above board.
Yes.
No? Is there anything I'm missing?
I think there's little things. Like, you read, you know, there's
I'm not saying Disgraceland. We're talking Disgraceland worthy.
Yeah, I don't think he's Disgraceland worthy.
He's not Disgraceland worthy.
I don't think so.
Stevie Wonder?
I don't know anything about Stevie Wonder. George Harrison, I want to do that home invasion thing.
It's my favorite Beatle.
He's fucking great.
Isn't that kind of hip to say he's your favorite Beatle, though?
No, you're not there yet, man.
No?
But, I mean, in a real way, it's hip, not in like a lame hip way.
It feels like a fake hip way to say that. You can't say Lennon or McCartney, and you can't say Ringo, right?
Although, check out Ram by McCartney. Do you know that record?
That was from, what year was that?
It was his second solo record.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I'm not a big McCartney guy.
This will change you, man.
It's fucking better than Pipes of Peace?
Yeah.
Better than Wonderful Christmas Time? It's the worst fucking song ever made.
Oh, I don't mind it.
Ray Charles is Graceland worthy?
Yeah, yeah.
Has to be?
Yeah, well, that's another thing, right? All these, I hate these biopics. I fucking hate them. They're lame. It's like Ray Charles, like, then he invented civil rights.
So syrupy, you know, it's bullshit.
It's gross.
That's the beauty of your thing, is you are, I love people who fucking take the hood. I like that. You're saying, no, great guy, not great guy, talented guy.
Yeah.
But here are the fucking flaws. Here they are.
Junkie, maniacal, womanizing, maniac.
Yes. I mean, but to your point, you know, I'm guessing when he was 6 years old, life was not easy for Ray Charles. I'm just going to take a guess and say he did not have an easy upbringing.
Right.
Johnny Cash has to be Disgraceland worthy.
Yeah. I want to do his home invasion with Shel Silverstein.
Oh, that's right.
Thanksgiving dinner.
That's right.
I can't find the enough info on it, though. It's in his book, but it's like 2 pages.
In Cash's, the Cash book you wrote?
Yeah.
Which is actually a pretty good book.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah.
Roy Orbison.
What's there?
I don't know. I like his voice. You got to find something.
Yeah.
His house burned down.
Did it?
Yes, he lived next door to Johnny Cash. His house burned down.
Maybe Johnny Cash was just burning everybody's houses down.
He's a pyromaniac.
Exactly.
But you fucking did a, this thing is fucking great. I look forward.
Thanks,
actually,
man.
You know, I like to, it's not, your fucking podcast is already fine. You don't need me to tell you that.
Well, you're critical as fuck. So hearing you say this is, it makes me feel like I'm tapping into the right. Right,
well,
so
I'm telling you, somebody runs, you are fucking dying for podcasts.
Yeah.
You know, and I find like just, you know, I mean, I don't know how you, do you, I don't know if you know how most people consume it or how, what they're doing, but I think it's people going to work, coming home from work. And it's like, you know, it, that's a perfect, most people drive 25, like for us, you know, we can find a way to average it out. Most people listen for 18 to 22 minutes. They drive to work and they listen to it.
Yeah.
And they listen to your thing on the drive home and then they're fucking, you know, they're done.
Yeah.
But you must be, you know, fucking stunned at the success of it.
I am. I'm blown away. I keep feeling like I'm going to fuck it up and I'm going to lose it. I'm like responding to every tweet, every Instagram post, everything. Yeah. I'm like, if I don't, it's all going to go away.
Nah, it'll be all right. But, do you find yourself when you're narrating it, do you sometimes feel like, holy shit, I'm overcooking it here. We got to slow down. How long does it take? How many takes do you do? Well, I guess you can edit the shit out of it.
No, I kind of read. I sit there and I read the. Now the thing is, I just read the whole thing, and then I go back and I cut it up.
Yeah.
But it takes me like hour and 15 minutes. Not a lot. A lot of it is once I tapped into what the tone was going to be.
Yeah.
It was pretty much like one take. I read the whole thing right before I do it, so I have it in my head. I know how I want to say things.
Do people sending you crazy conspiracy shit now or no?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Everyone wants me to do Kurt Cobain and blame it on Courtney Love.
Right.
But I don't. I just don't.
What documentary was that? Nick Bloom. That's the guy who did the Whitney Houston one, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, same director who did the Whitney Houston
one. You know what documentary is great? Mm. The Defiant Ones. Did you see that?
Which one's that?
The HBO one on Dre.
Oh, on Dre. Yeah, it was good. Except the last one was like an infomercial for Beats.
Yeah, for Beats.
And I was like, what the fuck are we doing here?
But the 90s one, it made me be like, God, I grew up in the 90s. And I was like, I don't remember it being this good.
See, we're two different. See, I was way more focused on...
We're the same age, though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but I think I was way more focused on the Bruce stuff.
Well, I got into Bruce later. Yeah. You know what got me into Bruce? Nebraska.
And you were
it's like every fucking punk rock kid's entry into, and it's lame. But then, you know, the first time I heard The River, I literally cried.
It's the greatest,
in a truck moving furniture in college. I literally started crying. It was like, this is my fucking life. It's my parents' life.
It's everybody's. Yeah,
you know. He's just on that. He's on another plane, man. He just gets you.
So. Who's the most overrated classic rock guy? Who do you say this guy sucks? Did you like Petty?
I love Petty.
You
Wildflowers.
Like
Wildflowers is a top five record for me. Seeger, I'm not as big into Seeger, but I appreciate it more as I get older. I hated the classic rock shit and I rebelled against it in high
school.
Everybody
does that.
But now I find myself, I want to listen. Like Steely Dan comes on, I'm like, well, this is fucking great.
Yeah, see, I've never been in, that's never been, Steely Dan's never, now Steely Dan would not be Disgraceland worthy, I don't think, right?
I don't know enough
time
about
to kick Chevy Chase out of the band? I don't think that qualifies.
Nice.
But it's a weird, but unfortunately for me, this is a character flaw. I've never moved past it. Like, I am still so stuck into that era. Like, I have to get past it.
Well, there's so much there. And, you know, I talk with my friends about this. It's like, why am I going to listen to a new record when there's, like, there's Beatles, B-sides?
Yeah, but shouldn't we, though? I mean, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we should.
You'll find. So how old's your oldest kid?
4.
All right, so you have a long. So now my daughter is 11, so now I'm into that. Like, honestly, like, this is fucking embarrassing to tweet it out, but, like, you said you cried when you listened to The River, so did I.
Yeah.
The first time I heard Sign of the Times by Harry Styles, I fucking cried.
It's great.
I know, but like, what the fuck?
It's great.
Like, but should a 43-year-old man be crying at a 20-year-old guy singing?
Yeah,
I should.
Yeah.
Should
it's like
I?
That Seinfeld thing.
Yeah,
you know?
It feels. But that's a like a good Elton John song.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really
right?
is.
But is that why do I?
It's not bad.
No,
it's cool. No. Who cares? There's
you like
no
Ed
rules?
Sheeran?
I hate Ed Sheeran.
Oh, okay, there you go. See,
I can't stand it. I don't get it.
Why don't you take him down? Did he kill anybody?
Well, if he did, I'd like him more. Right?
That's probably true. Taylor Swift.
There's some Taylor Swift I like, you know.
Feels manufactured to me.
It feels super manufactured, but even some manufactured, like, look, Carole King and Jerry Goffin, that stuff was manufactured, but it's some of the greatest pop music ever.
Yeah, but yes, I guess, but she, I don't know, does Taylor Swift write her stuff? I don't even know that.
She does now, or at least she gets credit for it. Like, I think you get enough power where you're basically like...
Like Chainsmokers?
No. God, no.
Coldplay?
No.
But you're the kind of guy who can't say you like Coldplay.
I could. No, I like some awful shit. I just said I like Steely Dan.
Yeah, but Steely Dan is sort of like so like...
But
so,
my thing, Kirk, growing up was I was always the guy who liked everything and got tons of shit for it. My dad opened for the Ramones when I was like 10 years old. And I got beat up for it by the punk rock kids.
For liking the Ramones?
No, fuck you. You saw the Ramones.
Oh, really?
You met the Ramones. You know what
I mean?
Right. But even then, like even in high school, like I was the guy who was friends with like the football players and the drug dealers.
Right.
Like I'd get the quarterback
weed.
I'm 43.
Oh, so you're exact same age as I am.
Yeah.
So you grew up in the same the same period exactly.
Yeah,
which was a strange like you go. I'm not sure what to say about the '80s now, like in musically 2018.
Awesome music, man.
You think?
Yeah, like even the bad shit I like. Like Aha will come on. I'll be like,
Take On Me. Well, Take On Me is a great song.
Exactly.
Right.
But yeah, I hated it then.
But I mean, like Prince was great.
Yes, one of the greatest.
Is there a Prince episode in there? Other than the death, I'm saying.
Maybe I don't know. Right. He was a mystery. That I like too. That doesn't happen anymore. The reason we're still fascinated with Dylan is because he just kept it all tight. You know what I mean?
We're talking about the stay in the show. It's funny you said that. Like Dylan. Like we were talking now, obviously he's not staying in, but like Dylan is touring as we speak. He never stops fucking touring.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't understand it.
I think he's afraid to stop.
Why?
Because he thinks he's done it his whole life. You know?
Have you seen him live?
Yeah.
I thought he sucked.
Yeah, it was awful.
I don't understand what he's singing. Like, and I'm like a B minus Dylan fan, right? So I know most of the stuff.
Yeah.
In the middle of it, you're like, holy shit, that's Lay, 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 Lay. Like, literally, I don't know what the fuck he's singing.
I think if you look at it, like, this guy doesn't give a fuck, and he's doing some avant-garde version of what he's into because he's so bored by his own shit. It becomes I can appreciate
it's a lot
of
it fun,
on
though,
level.
When you're sitting there.
Like, exactly.
Like, I understand you can rationalize it that way. But
it's like going to a jazz concert, which I don't do.
I have no fucking patience for that. I'm like, sing. Fucking somebody grab a microphone, sing about their dad.
Give me a melody.
Yeah, like, can somebody be upset about something? Who's the greatest live performer you've ever seen?
Probably Fugazi. Do you know who that band is?
I do not.
Or Jane's Addiction.
I know them.
Fugazi kind of invented straight edge and indie rock.
Yeah.
And just amazing, like incredibly amazing live band.
Did you ever see Bruce?
Yeah, multiple times.
Did you like it or no?
Oh, I loved it. I saw him, I think it was a tour, just got the E Street Band back together, like 99.
The reunion tour, yeah.
And that was phenomenal. And I'll never forget, I sat at the Causeway beforehand, and it was just me and my girlfriend at the time, and they were blaring Springsteen at an unlistenable level. Right. And it was just us in there drinking Jameson. Right. It was great.
You can't be bad.
And then I saw the Rising Tour.
Good tour, yeah.
And
that's a good record, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. I haven't seen him since then.
What do you think? I'll let you go here a minute. I'm sure you got out of here. You got a kid.
That's cool.
What would Kurt Cobain be doing today?
I think he's one of the ones, and maybe this is fantasy, but I think he'd be rebelling in a way that we wouldn't be able to really fully understand. I don't think almost in like a Bret Easton Ellis kind of way.
Sure.
Like, do you listen to his podcast?
Yes. Sometimes I like them. Sometimes I don't.
So he's one of these things where he's like, he's super liberal, but he doesn't take the liberal
easy,
narrative
right.
cheese. Like
right.
he's not afraid to like go outside of the narrative. And I think whatever Cobain would be rebelling against, it would be of that sort of ilk. It wouldn't be cookie cutter bullshit. Same with John Lennon.
Vedder, underrated, overrated. I say overrated.
There's a lot of stuff I don't like, but I love the guy.
His voice is better than his songwriting.
Yeah. There's like a decade of records that I don't care about there for those guys.
Pearl Jam's never been, I don't know.
They were phenomenal live. I saw them.
They're good live. I did see them live.
I saw them at Rocky Point in a roller rink opening.
Really?
For Smashing Pumpkins and the Chili Peppers. They were on first.
My uncle told me this must have been 70, I don't know what year it was. It can't be like Park. Mm-hmm. Battle of the Bands. He saw Boston versus Aerosmith in front of like 55 people.
Jesus Christ.
With the fucking roller coaster in the background. That's the shit you dig. I feel like that doesn't exist today, but I'm sure
that's
it does.
Amazing.
We tend to romanticize. Like, you're going to do this. Like, and I find myself, my daughter's playing, has her music she likes. And I'm making fun of them. I'm like, this is the fucking never ending circle. My dad would tell my mom would say, you can't play Van Halen.
Right.
And I'm sure his dad said, what is Ricky Nelson? Like, never end, which is the weirdest.
The difference now is there's no monoculture, though. There's no, like, with our kids, they're not all going to grow up listening to the same thing.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
It's a little different than it was.
And it's too accepting. We're too accepting nowadays.
We are,
like,
yes.
You know, you could say something sucks once in a while.
The generation gap isn't as strong either.
It doesn't feel that way.
Yeah.
All right, it's The Scray Slam, which is a great podcast. I can't recommend it enough. So every 2 weeks. So this will drop. This will actually drop tomorrow. We say drop, as you know, in the podcast.
Tuesday. Next week.
No, I'm saying this as we speak.
Oh, this will drop. Gotcha.
Today's Wednesday, right? This fucking week has been so you don't even know where you don't even care. You don't even care if there's a fucking blizzard outside.
Exactly.
You don't even give a shit. Although you're probably dying though. Like when my son and daughter were born, like I was always like I'd be like, oh, you need me to go around there and do something, and you feel like you're pretending you're a good guy, but you're like, and oh, there's this traffic. I don't know what the fuck happened. Like,
give me a minute alone.
You stretch everything out like an extra like 15 minutes. You feel like you're as reasonable as you can. Then you run back home every. Every 3 hours?
I know nothing.
You don't even know
my wife's
going
to listen to this, dude.
You have no idea. But so Tuesday is the next one for you.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Subscribe to it. You know, what else do you want on there? Subscribe, leave a comment, whatever the fuck
subscribe,
it is.
Rate it, review it.
Rate it, review it.
Tell your friends.
I tell you guys to do with us. Make sure you listen to it. It's awesome. Disgracefully, Jake, thanks so much.
Thanks, Kirk.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you.
Appreciate it, man.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.